Yom Tov, everyone. We're holding on page Lamed Aleph in Bava Metzia, Ois Lamed Aleph. We had learned previously about Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, the whole story where he was catching Ganovim, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha had criticized him for that, and Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon said that he had good reason to do what he was doing, but nevertheless there came a point when he started being concerned that maybe he's arresting innocent people, and then he said he did the whole test with his fat, that it and anything attached to it doesn't spoil, and therefore he knows that his body will remain intact after 120, and therefore that tells him that he's doing the right thing. Then the Gemara had digressed, having talked about Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon's fat, and we digressed to talk about the various other chachamim of the same physique, and that led us into Rabbi Yochanan and the whole story of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. So now getting back to the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, "Va'afilu hochi v'samach Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon adaite." Nevertheless, with all of this, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon did not want to rely on his own das that he had done the right thing. After all, he's still concerned. Now, what is he concerned about? The Rif points out over here that why he already checked himself with the fat and found that it didn't spoil, and he already knew after sorta yishkin levetach. So what's the problem? So the Rif points out over here that maybe, fine, he can see that his body will remain intact. What about his neshama? So therefore he's going to accept Yisurim on himself. Another possibility that the Mephoshim talk about over here is maybe in fact these things are told out of order, even though the Gemara is giving it in the order first that he did the experiment with the fat. So the Rif goes on to say that even though the Gemara tells the story with the experiment with the fat, and now we're going to talk about a Yisurim, maybe in fact it was the other way around, Ein Muktam Ma'ucha B'Gemara, and therefore that first he took on himself Yisurim, and then as a final test he did the test with the fat, and then that's it. Then he knows for sure that everything's good. So Kabbalah Yisuri, so Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon accepted Yisurim on himself. But the result of the Yisurim was that he had terrible sores and pains and all over his body. So Be'uta, in the evening, Habu Maichin Leishikin Namtin, they would lay out for him 60 layers of felt in order to absorb all the blood and pus that's oozing from his wounds. 60, a lot of times the Gemara often uses 60 as a large indefinite number, so it doesn't dafka always mean 60. However, Marsha and Ben Yoyada point out over here that it may symbolize later on, we're going to talk about in a few days, Be'ez Hashem will learn about a story where the Yohan Novi was given 60 malchus, 60 pulsi denura, 60 lashes of fire, minashamayim. So the punishment that's given by Beis Din Shalmata is maximum 39 malchus. The one that's given by Beis Din Shalmaila is 60 for reasons that we'll learn about over there. So therefore, in token of that, then it may be using the number 60 over here in that connection as well. The yisurim that he's having are because he's been given yisurim milamayla in the number 60, the same way as they give Malchus in the number 60. So every evening they would put down 60 layers of felt to absorb all the blood and pus that's oozing from his wounds. Litzafra, and in the morning, Nagdimitusi Shisim Mishikli Dom of a Kava. In the morning, they would draw from underneath him 60 bowls full of blood and pus, meaning, in other words, that he was suffering from Shrin, Rashi says. So, in other words, as much as you had the 60 layers of felt that was supposed to be absorbing all of it, so much was oozing out that even the felt, it would soak right through the felt, and you would be able, and they could collect 60 basins worth of that stuff. Lamacho, the next morning, Obdelei Deves, who shits in mine laughter. The next day, his wife would make for him, to cure him, 60 types of laughter. Laughter, Rashi describes, is a type of food made from figs, so some kind of soft food or porridge or something like that, prepared, again, 60 different ways. Again, laughter after 60, exactly the number, but however, whatever 60 symbolizes over here, as Marshad said. So she would prepare him those. Those are, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, those are good for a sick person. So v'ochel lehu, he would eat those, uvori, and then he would feel better. However, well, now he's ready. He wants to go to the Beis Medrash, learn with his fellow chachamim. But his wife would not allow him to, because she's worried about his health. so that the Rabbanon do not cause him, so that the Rabbanon do not cause him trouble. They're going to harass him, first of all, on a simple sense. It could just mean, of course, you're going to be surrounding him with questions and answers, and he's going to be working so hard in Torah, as we talked about yesterday. Torah weakens a person's body, so she's concerned about that. But in addition, on top of that, with him, it's more than that. It's more than just the fact that he's been suffering Yisurim. There's also the fact that after all he had been catching those ganovim, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha had criticized him for that, and other chachamim are going to criticize him for that as well. As the Gemara is going to say later on, some of these ganovim may have been relatives even of the chachamim, and therefore she's concerned that now they're going to harass him not just by asking him questions and discussing with him in Torah, which itself weakens the body, but also that they may go and they may get angry at him and treat him disrespectfully, and then especially in his weak state of health, she didn't want him to have to go through that. Now, the Gemara mentions elsewhere that Yisurim Shal'ava, that Yisurim that show that a person is beloved by Hashem, as is the case over here, that he asks for Yisurim. And then those are the kind that don't prevent a person from learning Torah. So what did Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon do in order that the Taka shouldn't bother him from learning Torah? Be'urta, every evening, Omalahu, he would say to the Yisurim, Achai v'rei'ai boyu, my friends and my beloved ones, come. He's calling them Achai v'rei'ai because he has accepted them as Yisurim Shal'ava. So in the evening, go ahead, then please come, because he wants that Yisurim, he wants that kapara from it, and the closeness that will bring him to the Eibishter. But Safra, in the morning, Omalahu Zilu, with name Bitul Torah, in the morning he would tell them, go away, because of Bitul Torah, because I need to be able to learn during the day, and I can't if I'm going to be distracted by Yisurim. So he would do that every day. Marsha brings in this connection, the pasuk from Kapitel Ayin Gimel and Tilim, Rohina Gua Kolayoim V'Sechachti Labkorim. I've been afflicted all day, and my Teuchecha and my Musar is in the morning. So here, what it means is, one meaning of it, Marsha says, Rohina Gua Kolayoim, all day I would be afflicted, but every day I give Teuchecha Labkorim in the morning and tell the Yisurim to go away because I need to learn Torah. Well, Yom Echad Shama Dvesu, one day his wife overheard him saying that. So she realized all this time she didn't know what the Yisurim came from, and she thought it's a constant, ongoing thing, which is also why she didn't want him to go to the Beis Medrash. Now, all of a sudden, she realizes that this is something he voluntarily brought on himself. Omrele, she said, Atka Maisis Lehui Lavach, you brought these Yisurim and these sores and shrin and all that on yourself. Kilisa Momen Shabbos Abba, you used up so much of the money that I brought for my father's house. So when they had gotten married, she had brought in a nadin, of money, you know, like you have a loshen and a chsuba, that you have kesef, zohav, tachshitim, shemushid arsa, et cetera, all the different kinds of assets that a wife brings into the marriage. Now she's saying, look, all these years, every night they've been putting down these felt for you to absorb the blood and pus, and every morning those felt sheets are wound. And all the laughter and all of that, you've wasted all this money, and here you took this, and here you used it all for your Yisurim. Imrida, so she rebelled against him, Ozla Lebe Nosha, and she went back to her father's house. Well, what's going to happen now that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon is suffering these Yisurim and has nobody to take care of him? So the Eibishter arranged, Sliko v'osu hanach shikin sfunoi, 60 sailors came along. And came to his house. Why sailors? So Rashi and Tosfos both bring that these sailors had been in a storm and they had davened to the Eibishter to be saved in Rabbi Elazar's schus. And sure enough, they were saved. So now the Eibishter made that happen. Punct in the time they came, having come safely from their voyage, and they came punct on the day that his wife had left. Al-Derech, you have a famous story with a Rebbe, I don't remember which one now, every day is Shamash brings him food, and every day the Rebbe davens to the Eibishter for food, and then the Shamash brings it, and one day the Shamash thinks to himself, why is he always asking the Eibishter for it? I'm the one who brings it. So he decides tomorrow he's going to go on strike, and then punkt, the Eibishter makes happen that day that somebody comes to him, that somebody comes to him for a bracha and gives him food. So in the same way over here, it doesn't depend on his wife. It depends on the Eibishter, and if he's not available, then the sailors will do it.
Knock to the window and set time.
Something like that, yeah, something like that. I don't remember exactly. Like, he would knock on the window and say, I would say to the Eibishter, I'm hungry, and the Shamash would serve him. Yeah, something like that, yeah. Maharsha points out also, you know, the Gemara tells us, that we learned at the end of Kiddushin, that various kinds of trades that people do, some of them are more prone to thievery than others. We said, for example, Chamorim Ruben Rishoyim, most donkey drivers, which was the equivalent of truck drivers back then, are Rishoyim, as opposed to the Mishnah had said over there, that a Saponim, that sailors are mostly Chassidim, because as Rashi had said over there, they're constantly exposed to danger on the high seas, and therefore they feel very contrite, and they feel very close to the Eibishter. Now, before we were saying Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon was getting rid of all the listim, of all of the robbers, well, since the sailors are mostly Chassidim, they didn't have robbers among them. So therefore the other people of other walks of life are going to be angry at Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon because he caused some of their friends to be killed. But among the Saponim, there aren't going to be any. Therefore, they have particular reason to be grateful to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, especially based on what Rashi and Tosfos are saying about him, about his school saving them from a storm, and therefore they came to help him. Ayrul Shitin Avdi, they brought him 60 servants, so the pastors, each one of them sent a servant, Kinakiti Shitin Arniki, each one holding a purse of money, so that there were 60 purses, V'Avdil Shitin Mine Laftah, and they made him the 60 kinds of laughter that would be good for his condition, V'Ochaluhu, and he ate them. And apparently this wasn't just a one-time thing, this was on a day-by-day basis, these sailors are supporting him. Yoimachad Omra Lebrata, one day Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's wife says to her daughter, who the wife is still staying by her father's house, she says, Zil Baki Ba'avuch, go check out, find out what's doing with your father. Baki, Rashi says in Lashon Bekius, V'yadia, go find out, you and use your expertise, Ba'avuch, what about your father, my Ka'abed Ha'idna, what is he doing now? I left him, L'chore, yeah, nobody to support him, what's been happening? Osya, she said, the daughter came, Omala, so Rabbi Elazar tells us, Zil Imri Le'imach, go tell your mother, Shalonu Godu Mishalahem. What we have, the riches that we have over here, is greater than theirs. Meaning you said you brought in a bunch of riches from your father's house, and I spent so much of it on treatments for my illnesses and all, but now you should know, as a result of this thing with the sailors, now I have more money than you and your father's house do. And he applied to himself the pasuk Hoisa Kaniyas Sechir. She was like the merchant ships. Mimerchok Tavi Lachma. She brings her food from far away. And Rashi points out one of the many meanings. That's an Eishes Chayil. One of the many meanings of Eishes Chayil is that it's a song in praise of the Torah. Well, then he's referring to the schus of his Torah help that now these sailors came Mimerchok from far away and are supplying him with food. Well. So the pashtus on the first day that this happened, he ate and drank and felt better. Now his wife is not around to prevent him, so he went to the Beis Medrash for the first time in a while. When Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon was there in the Beis Medrash, they brought him 60 samples of blood. Women came, they had blood on their clothing, and the question is whether it's dam tohar or not. The Ikra Din, there were only five shades of blood that are Tomei is Dam Nida. Any other shade is in principle Tahor. Nowadays, the Gemara already mentions that there were later Amiroyim who lost the expertise to be able to tell these fine details, and therefore nowadays you ask a Rav and just about any shade of red or even brown or even some other shades is going to have to be considered Tomei Misafik. But the Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon was an expert on this kind of thing, and he was able to tell. Tarinu, he declared them all Tahor. Every single one of them, he says, is not one of the five shades, and therefore the women are tahor, and they're allowed to be with their husbands. But the Chachamim were laughing or mocking at that and questioning that. But Amri, and they said, Sakadaitach Lesbahu Chad Safik. What do you think? Is it impossible? There's not even one Safik between them? Statistically, how likely is that? The likelihood is at least one of them, she is in fact Tomei Nidur, or at least Safik Tomei. Amalahu, said Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, tells them, Im Kemosihu, if I am correct and all of them are in fact Tahor, you, Kulam Schorim, then all these women, when they're with their husbands next, they should all conceive and give birth to boys. V'im lav, and if not, Tehinakeva Achas Beinehem, then at least one of them will be a girl.
Why is that a simon for it? Marsha points out, because after all, men don't have dam nida. So if he's correct and all of them are in fact tohar, then the Eibishter will show it by all the boys who are born as a result of these unions will all be males, and then they have no dam nida, representing, in other words, that there truly was no dam nida among any of these 60 samples. And if not, then one of them will be a girl who eventually will grow up to herself have dam nida. So that's one point. Iyun Yaakov mentions another point as well, that the Medrash tells us in Parshas Tazria, that if you keep the Shiva Simei Niga, then you have the there's an expression in a Pasuk, Ten Chelek L'Shiva V'Gam L'Shmoina. Give a portion to the seven and also to the eight. So the Medrash has a number, it's a Pasuk in Tehillah. So the Medrash there has a number of explanations what that means, and one of them is that if you kept the portion of the seven, if you kept the 7 days of Niga, then your reward will be that you'll have a boy, and you'll have the mitzvah, another mitzvah of Bris Milah on the eighth day for him. So therefore, so now you have the same connection over here, that if they kept properly nida, and none of these women were in fact off limits to their husband, then all of them will have schorim, and all of them will have the schos to have a bris on the eighth day. Eitz Yosef talks about a more elaborate thing than that having a baby in this kind of circumstance shows that they were careful with all the three mitzvahs that women were careful with, among them nida, so it's all the same thing. Sure enough, Hoyu Kulam Schorim, all these women ended up giving birth to boys. Vasikulahu, Rebbe Lazar Al Shmei, they named all the boys Elazar after him because they credited him. It's thanks to him that all these boys were conceived. Tanya, so now in this connection, we learn in a Braisa, Omer Rebbe, Kama Piri Verivya Bitla Risha Zumi Yisrael. Look how much Piri Verivya this Risha prevented from the Jewish people. Because all this time, who's the Risha? We'll talk about it in a second. But meaning in other words like this. All this time, Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon was not able to come to the Beis Medrash because he had been busy catching thieves for the Roman government. So imagine, the first explanation, Rashi says the Risha means the Malchus HaRisha, the wicked Roman government. If they hadn't appointed Rebbe Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon, the chief of police, earlier on in the story, at the beginning of the story, then he would have been coming to the Beis Medrash every single day. There would have been many other times that women came with samples, and he, being such an expert, would have been able to declare them to her. As it is, because he wasn't there, and the other Chachamim weren't expert enough to be able to tell these fine differences, so many times they would have to, like Rabbanim nowadays, tell the women, Mitzad HaSafik, you have to consider yourself Tomei, because we really don't know. And then the result is that they were Mevatel, it could be that they were Tahar, and they would have been able to do period Vidivya, and now that was prevented, all thanks to the Roman government appointing him as the chief of police. Rashi's second explanation is that the Risha actually refers to his wife preventing him from coming to the Beis Medrash. Now, Hagoris Agros says on that, that can't possibly be correct. For one thing, we have further in the Gemara where after Rabbi Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon passed away, Rebbe wanted to marry his almana. If she, first of all, how do you call the wife of a tzaddik, Rabbi Elazar ben Rebbe Shimon? How do you call her a Risha? And second of all, how would Rebbe have wanted to marry her then? He certainly doesn't want to marry a Risha. With that said, though, then Yehoyada points out maybe we could enter the second explanation of Rashi. Because the word Rosha in Tanakh does not always mean what we think of as a Rosha, a wicked person. Sometimes Rosha means nervousness. You have the letters Ra'ash, which means a noise, and which also means a trembling. Sometimes the word Rosha also means, there's a few places like that. You have, for example, a pasuk about Shaul HaMelech, over Chola Shigifne Yavshia. That means wherever he went to fight against the Goyim surrounding Eretz Yisrael, he terrorized them. So we see that the word Hoshia and the Shodosh Rosha sometimes means to be nervous and to be terrified. Another interesting example of that actually is the Meiri in his Pirush on Tehillim explains the very first pasuk of Tehillim, Asher Heisha Shalai Alach Ba'atzas Rishoyim. He says the Rishoyim over there are not necessarily what we usually think of as Rishoyim, wicked people. It can mean like that, people who are who are always nervous and hastening around and their business or whatever. So Asher Heish, who doesn't get too far tifed in that, but rather with Torah Hashem Chefter. His main focus is Torah, and to the extent he needs to do business, then fine, but he's not Rishoyim, he's not nervous and constantly agitated over it. So now, Ben Yehoyada says, in the same way, we hear Risha Zu can mean his wife, not that we're calling her a Risha as in a wicked woman, but as in her nervousness, this that she was nervous about that her husband shouldn't go to the Beis Medrash because it's going to harm his health. Look how much Piri Vidivya that prevented, because all that time he could have been going to the Beis Medrash and answering such shilas. Okay, the Gemara continues. He have a kanicha nafshe before Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon passed away. Omer lo l'divei. So he says to his wife, Yadayna v'rabbanan d'resichi alai. I know that the other chachamim are angry at me. So first of all, we had Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha criticizing him for catching the thieves in the first place. But Rashi points out anyway, the other chachamim that were some of these ganovim that I caught were relatives of theirs. So therefore, they hold that against me. So they won't take good care of me. They won't give the proper cover when it comes to my kavura. They won't do a proper hesped. They won't bury him with Reb Shimon, his father. And he knew he's on the level to be buried with Reb Shimon. As the Gemara says later, they were both in the Ma'ara together. And the hesped is a very important thing. It's a benefit for the neshama of the nifter. It's also a benefit for all the living that they learn from what the tzaddik did, and they learn from that that nobody should ever think that I'm in this world and that's that. They should always realize that even tzaddikim passed away. They can learn from the tzaddik's ways. By us in Lubavitch, we don't do hespedim mainly because there's a concern that if you exaggerate about the person. Then it's actually worse for his neshama. But nevertheless, you still have, there is something similar. We don't do it after Levaya, but we do afterwards, at the end of Shiva or at the end of Shloshim. Then you have a get together and you talk about the nifter. So it's kind of the same thing. In any case, so he's saying, I know that the chachamim won't act with me properly according to the covered that's supposed to be for me. So he tells his wife. By now, apparently, his wife had returned to him. So lay me down in the attic, lay my body down in the attic of our house, and don't be afraid of me. I'll lie there until circumstances change. Now, Marsha points out, the fact is there's a mitzvah asay in the Torah to bury a mess. Whenever you're not allowed to leave a mess. He's talking about after he's dead, yeah. What? Yeah, after he's dead, instead of sending his body to be buried, she should lay it in the attic and don't worry, he says. He's already done the test with the fat. He knows his body is not going to decay. So, yeah. The fact is, though, there is a mitzvah saseh to bury a person. Ideally, you're supposed to bury him on that day. In certain cases, you can leave it overnight where it's for covered a mess. So how can Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon tell his wife to leave him unburied? The Maharsha points out like this. The Gemara actually in Sanhedrin has a whole discussion. What is the reason why the Torah says to bury the dead? Is it primarily because of bizoyan, because it would be bizoyan to leave the mess unburied? Or is it because of kapara? Is it a kapara for the person that he's buried and that his body decays and then is eaten up by worms in the grave? Well, Rabbi Elazar ben Reb Shimon had already done the test and found that worms won't eat him up. So therefore, bizoyan is not a factor. Kapara he doesn't need either because of all the yisurim that he went through all these years. So neither of the reasons apply. Now, another reason for the burial would be covered a mess. Well, then, in that case, covered a mess is taka a valid reason to delay a burial. Well, here, that's exactly it. He's saying they won't do the proper covered a mess. Therefore, that becomes a proper reason to delay the burial until such time as there will be proper covered a mess, as the Gemara will go on to tell the rest of the story how that eventually happened. So, therefore, it's a valid thing to not bury him under those circumstances. So, how long did he remain unburied? Omer of Shmuel ben Achmeni, so Shmuel ben Achmeni in a later generation tells Ishtoyeli image of Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonason, the mother of Rabbi Yonason told me, the Ishtoyelah Dvesu de Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, who in turn was told personally by Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's wife, so later on she told it over to a woman who later on was the mother of Rabbi Yochanan or Rabbi Yonason, and she in turn told it over to Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni in a later generation. How long was that? Not less than 18 years and not more than 22. The wife says is how long I've kept him in the attic over there. So apparently many years later, she wasn't sure of the exact number, but it was somewhere between 18 and 22 years after her husband had passed away. And she goes on to tell what happened during all those years. He had a salikna when I would go up to the attic to check on him. I would check his hair. to see to the why Dafka is here. Ben Yoyoda gives a couple of reasons. One of them is that as a practical matter, he's lying on the floor over there in the attic. She wants to make sure that bugs and then lice and whatever are not getting into his hair. But besides that, also Ben Yoyoda points out another reason as well. We find in a few places in Chas that a wife checking her husband's hair, that kind of thing, checking for lice or dirt like that, is a very intimate kind of thing between them. Gemara in Bava Basra mentions that that so to speak, Sora is doing that for Avraham in Maris Machpela. So it shows that there's still an intimacy between them after all these years. He's checking his hair, and she says, "Ki have a mishkamta beneath the minei. If even a hair would fall out of his head, have a osadama, blood would come out." Now, when a living person, when a hair is pulled out, then sometimes the area, the follicle will bleed. So now the point is, in other words, his body is still so fresh after all this time that it would still do the same thing. It wasn't like a dried up body. It wasn't like a dried up body. Yoimachad, she says, one day, Chazoi Richa de Kondofik Ma'udne. One day, I saw a worm crawling out of his ear. I felt bad. Now the body is starting to decay. That night, though, my husband appeared to me in a dream, she says. Omali, he says, loy midihu, it's nothing to worry about. What happened was, shami one day, years earlier, I had heard people making fun of a young Tamad Chacham, and I wasn't moicha, like I was supposed to, and therefore now a worm came out of my ear, the ear that heard that insult of the Tamad Chacham, and did not react. So therefore, it was decided min hashamayim that I have to have a worm in that part of my body. But other than that, don't worry, my body is still secure against rotting and against worms. Why did Dafka happen on that day? Maybe one possibility is maybe this Tzurvim and Abonim had passed away, and now they're going over his life in the Beis Din Shamayla, and this came up. Maybe it was the anniversary of the day when it happened. I guess there were a few possibilities we could think of. Another point, she says, and she's telling over the story years later, Kiava also beit shrei ledina, when two people would come for a din Torah, have a kaimi abava. Now, they would come to dine Torah by Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, when he was alive, of course. Now, after he passed away, they would still come. Apparently, the locals knew that his body was still there. They knew he hadn't been buried yet. So they would still come to the house, have a kaimi abava. They would stand by the door, oma mal milse or mal milse. Each one of the bale dinim would say his claim. All of a sudden, a voice would come from the attic, and say that you're liable and you're innocent, and then you're liable to pay and you're not. Now, what about Loiva Shemayini? That's a good point. That's brought up, and then the Maharal, I think, gives an answer that it doesn't necessarily mean that they actually heard a voice. It means that because his neshama is still tied to his body over there, because the body is still there, and then therefore the neshama is there, his kedusha, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's kedusha, was so much that when the people would come there to his house and each one give their arguments, it would bring about min hashamayim, a ruach on them, that all of a sudden they themselves would instinctively feel, you know what, I'm wrong and the other guy is right. And they both feel this kind of, there's the spirit in Milamayla that tells them what the right thing is. So they don't necessarily have to hear literally a voice, but like inside in their own minds, they're made to realize the truth. She continues. So that was the story as she told it to Rabbi Yonason's mother, who in turn told it to Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni, and it's recorded in the Gemara. Now, what happened? How did Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon eventually come to be buried? So the Gemara says, Yom Echad have a kaminsya dvesu bahadishi bavta. One day, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's wife, his almana, was arguing with one of the neighbor women. Omr Allah, in the heat of the argument, this other woman said to her, Tehei kabaylach shalei nitim lekvoda. You should be like your husband who was never given to be buried. An insult to her, Pashat. Amri Rabbanan. So the Chachamim said, now that this is becoming known, Kulehai Vadala Lav Urahara. At this point, it's certainly not Derech Eretz to keep him unburied. One thing, when it was not known widely, to find maybe it's known among the neighbors, and the neighbors would be the ones coming for Dine Torah or whatever, is one thing. But here you have it's becoming so widely known that people are using it as an insult like that. Then already the whole point was he didn't want to be buried because of a lack of coverage for him. Well, now, it's a lack of cover for him to remain unburied anymore. So we got to do something about it.
Well, he was the one that said...
He was the one who said, to begin with, that they wouldn't give him the proper cover. But now the Chachamim realize, now that it's becoming public knowledge, then it's an even greater lack of cover for him for this to remain this way. So that's one version. Ikadamri, another version of Rav Shimon ben Yochai is Schazi Lehu B'chelma. Another version is that Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Rav Elazar's father, came to the Chachamim in a dream. Omer Lehu, and he tells them, Psida Achas Yeshli Beinechem, there is one precious dove that I have among you, my son. And you don't want to bring him to me. In other words, at the time, he needs to be buried in the same Ma'ara in Meiron, where his father of Shimon ben Yochai is buried. So according to either version, it's time to bury him. Also, Rabbanon Yasuki Beis, so sure enough, the Chachamim went to deal with him, to take Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and bury him. However, the people of Achbaria, which was a nearby town, did not want to let them. And the reason is, the Chol Shnei, to have a Noyim, Rav Elazar ben Shimon ve'Elise, all those years when Rav Elazar ben Shimon was lying in his attic, no wild animals would come into their village. So in other words, his schus was protecting them. So therefore, they didn't want the body to be buried, because as long as his chus is with them, then they'll be protected. Why dafka this, that wild animals wouldn't come? Marsha points out, the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, Chaya ra bala olam al shvos shav v'achil Hashem. One of the things that brings wild animals attacking is when people swear falsely. Well, here we just had, people would come to their Dinei Torah by Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, and they would hear a voice from the attic telling them what the fact, what the truth is, and what the din is. Therefore, nobody needs to swear, so there's no false shvur. No false shvur, no wild animals. So now the people of Achbaria therefore did not want the body to be taken away, because then that schus will go away. There's an interesting explanation in that connection about this that in Parashas Vayechi, after Yaakov passed away, that they embalmed him by Yachan to Arufim Es Yisrael. Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz has a long interesting explanation about it in his Sefer Yaris Dvash. He says basically the idea is like this: Bechlal, why the Mitzrim embalm their dead is because they wanted to be able to do Dorda Shalameisim. They wanted to be able afterwards to consult with them and ask them, which we know is for us that's also in the Torah. So therefore they would embalm their dead on the theory that way the neshama will stay together with the body, and then they can ask it questions. By us, you don't have such a thing, but on the other hand, the Shvatim wanted to have, they figured, we're in Golas Mitzrayim, it's our first and very harsh Golas. We need the spirit, we need the neshama of Yaakov Avinu to stay with us throughout the Golas, so that we're, so we have him defending us, al derech like you have over here, with Rebbe Elazar ben Shimon's body and neshama. The truth is they didn't need it, because Yaakov Avinu lay mace, but they didn't realize that, which is why they had him embalmed. So here, in the same vein then, the people of Achbaria, they knew that all this time, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's neshama had been with his body, as long as it's not buried, and therefore they wanted to keep it that way. So, what happens? So what did the Chacham do? Yom Echad Mala Yom de Kippur Hava. One day, it was Erev Yom Kippur, Havu Tridi, and the people of Achbaria are busy, because they're busy with their Suda, with their Erev Yom Kippur Suda, and with everything else that they're doing. So now the Chacham have their opportunity, when the people of Achbaria are otherwise occupied. Shadrur Rabbanan Lebnei Biri. So the Chachamim sent the people of Biri to handle the matter. Biri is another village in that area. You have Adai Yemezer, there's a town near Tzfas called Biri. It has another claim to fame in Jewish history during the time that Beis Yosef lived in Tzfas. At one point, and it was right in the Shulchan Aruch, at one point there was an epidemic in Tzfas, and he had to move to the town of Biri nearby, and that's where he finished the Shulchan Aruch. So they called for the people of Biri. Why Biri? Rashi says that there are two gersoris in Rashi. One is that they were kovrim, they were professional grave diggers, so they would be the ones to be able to dig the grave and bury Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. The other gear says that they were kovrim, they were relatives of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, the people in Biri. And therefore they'd be the ones, they'd be the appropriate ones to handle the Leviathan. Anyway, so the Chacham sent for them. Sure enough, by a school of Arse, they brought up his coffin, his bier, and they brought it to the cave in Meron where his father, Rav Shimon ben Yochai, is buried. They found an achna surrounding the cave. We had that before at the end of Bava Kama. We had that earlier in our Masechta about Tanur Shalachnoi. An achna is a type of snake that lies in a circle with its tail in its mouth. So you can't get through. So it's a simon. So we find at the end of Bava Kamma that it's often that some such a snake would be guarding the burial places of Chachamim so that not just anybody can enter. Then Yehoyada over there points out a gematria in it that the word achna is gematria. I don't remember what the gematria is, but it's a gematria of something that represents it's a gematria I think of Naaman, that a trustworthy person, as in this is a trustworthy snake that fulfills its mission to keep that untrustworthy people shouldn't come in. So you have an achna over there. Omrula, but they said, achna, pischi pich, open up your mouth, v'ikonis bein etzel aviv, and let the son come and be with his father. Pasach lehu, and the snake opened up, and they were able to go in and bury Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon. Adayim Azeh, when you visit Miron, you have on the arch over there, you have Reb Shimon Yochai's name, but you have also inside, you go inside, you'll find over there tzion of Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon as well, together with his father. So now the Gemara continues. Sholach Rebbe v'daber be'ishay. Rebbe asked, now that Reb Elazar ben Shimon had been buried, then Rebbe sent a messenger that he wanted to speak to his wife to propose marriage to her. Sholchaleh, she answered him back a message. Klishin ishtamish b'kodesh ishtamish b'chol. Should a keli, such as myself, that kodesh used it, should chol use it? In other words, compared to my husband, Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon, you, Rebbe, as great a tzaddik and Talmid Chacham as you are, you're considered chol relative to him. Taman Amrin, over there in Eretz Yisrael, they have a different expression that she used. She says, Ba'asar de Morid Beis Atola Zayne, in the place where the master of the house used to hang his weapons, Kulbaraya, now later on, the degraded shepherd, Kulse Tola, hangs up his briefcase. So in other words, the same kind of idea. In other words, imagine like you have a house. Imagine like you have a mansion where the previous owner of it was a mighty warrior, and he would hang up his weapons over there, and he would have them on display. Now the lowly shepherd comes in and takes over the place instead. And what does he hang in there? What does he hang there instead? His shepherd's bag. In other words, the same idea. In other words, like you have it's going down a tremendous level. So according to either version, in other words, she's telling Rebbe, I was married to somebody who was a much greater person than you. I don't want to go down a level and marry you. The Shalachla, so Rebbe wasn't offended. He sent her back a message. Nihi de b'Torda gadol m'meni. He granted Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon is greater than me in Torah. Abba Meisim Tovim be gadol m'meni. Was he greater than me in Meisim Tovim? So maybe I do have a shot. So she answers him back, you're saying that he's greater in Torah than you? Fine, I don't know. You yourself are saying that he's greater in Torah, so fine, I accept that. I can't really measure that. But when it comes to Maisim, that I do know that he's definitely greater than you to have a Kabbalah Le Yisuri, because he accepted Yisurim on himself. So that puts him on a higher level of Maisim Tovim than you, and therefore, no, I don't want to marry you. What? The Yisurim included as part of Maisim Tovim, in other words, that he accepted on himself Yisurim, which we said, the Gemara says later on, it was these Yisurim brought about Kapara and brought about goodness for the whole Jewish people during the time that he was undergoing them, so therefore that's included in Maisim Tovim. Rebbe had conceded that Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon is greater than him in Torah. So the Gemara will deal with the next piece, the next dozen or two lines are going to deal with how we know that. Where do we see that Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon is greater than Rebbe in Torah? I mean, Rebbe was the great Reb Yehuda Hanasi who composed the Mishnah. How is Reb Elazar ben Reb Shimon greater than him in Torah? So we'll see next time, guys, for them. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Yutus Kislev Chag Ge'ola, Rosh Hashanah L'Chassidus. So the Rebbe talks about Nesicha in Tavshin Nun Beis that the great Maira of Rosh Hashanah, of Matan Torah, of Torah Sachsidus, and why we call it Chag HaChagim, the holiday of holidays, is because that's the day on which there begins the revelation of Torah Sishon Mashiach, the Taimei Torah, the deep reasons of the Torah. what Rashi calls in the Shir HaShirim, Sod Tameo Mister Tzvonisel, the secret reasons and the hidden concealed things of Torah. That's what Torah Sachsidus is. When the Pasuk says V'dei Yishkateini Minashikas Piuk, Yitovim Dedecha Miyayin, that's what Rashi explains. That refers to this level of learning Torah. But nevertheless, the Alter Rebbe brought it out in a much greater way, in a much more understandable way. That was why there was a kitzurug on him more so than there was the Baal Shem Tov. That was the famous thing, that the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid and came to him and told him there's a kitzurug on him, and he says, should I stop teaching Chassidus? And they said, Adrabba, keep on doing it even more. And after Petterburg is particularly when the revelation of it began in a big way. This is also what it says, Torah Chadoshim, Iki Teitzei, that in Mashiach's times, there'll be a whole new dimension of Torah, and Torah Sachsidus, where Be'ein Aruch, incomparable to the Hisgalos that there was by Matan Torah. So Yudas Kislev is the beginning of that. And in fact, Chazal tell us in the Medrash, that the Torah that a person learns in this world is hevel, is considered like nothing, like just a breath, relative to Torah Sashem Mashiach. So as much as we learn Torah now, it's all only like hevel, havel avolim, compared to the Torah of Mashiach. So now Yitzchak Kislev is the beginning of that. Continuing with halachas of Ashkamas Aboiker. So here we talk about Mordaani and washing Negovasser and a person getting up during the night and saying Tachnunim. So now the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, it's good to say every day the parasha of the Akedah, as we do. This way, we remember the source of the Ovis before Hashem, and also, this way, it also brings his Yetzer Hara, it subjugates his Yetzer Hara to serve the Eibishter like Yitzchak was ready to sacrifice himself. Now then also, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say that a person should say Parshas Hamon. Because so that a person should believe that his mizonos come to him by Ashkocha, just as it was by the mon, where the Eibishter gave every person his omer lagogolos for and then measured it out exactly per person in the family, as we know that every person gathered no more and no less than the exact amount that the Eibishter had decided that family needs. We don't have the Alter Rebbe did not in the end put in Parshas Hamon in the Siddur. There's actually a sicha where the Rebbe talks about why that is. But that's how it is. The fact is that we don't have Parashas Amon in the Seder. Then you have also, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, another thing that a person should say every day is the Aseres Adibris, so that he remembers Maimed Harsina every day and strengthens his Amunah. Again, the Alter Rebbe did not put that in the Siddur either. Now, in fact, the Gemara tells us that at one point the Chachamim wanted to put Aseres Adibris as part of Krishna. They wanted to have, like this, you have the three pouches of Krishna, they wanted to also add the Aseres Adibris. They did not do that, or the Gemara says, they stopped doing it because of the Minim. Because the Minim would claim that only the Aseres Adibris is Torah, and they would claim to the Ami Ha'aretz that the rest of Torah is not true, as you see, that they read only what we heard directly from Hashem by Sinai, so because of that, as we see, Adayim Azeh, you have other religions that claim that the Ten Commandments is the only important thing. So therefore, because of that, the Chachamim were mevatel. So because of that, you're not allowed to say the Aseres Adibris B'tzibur as a kriyastika thing every day, even if you're not saying it in Birkas HaShachar, even if you're going to say it before Baruch Shammah, but an individual can say it for himself, because that's not going to cause anything of the minim. So for the same reason, because of the minim, then we don't print them as a separate kuntris for the community to say, for the same reason, so that the minim don't use that as an excuse. There is an interesting thing in that connection also where the posts can talk about, like this, we do give honor to the Aseres Adibris. We stand up by them when we lay them in the Torah. Should we in fact do that? There are posts who mention on the same grounds, maybe Taki you shouldn't, for the same reason. Nevertheless, that's not the accepted minim, and we do in fact stand for Aseres Adibris and don't have a problem with that. But to say it every day, but Sibur, as the Alter Rebbe is saying over here, based on that Gemara in Brachas, we don't do that. The Gemara mentions over there, the Mishnah in Talmud, that the Koyanim in the Besmikdash would have every day the Koyanim doing in the middle of the Avodah would stop and say certain parts of davening, and among them is Aseres Adibris, because there you don't have a problem because you didn't have Minim among the Koyanim in the Besmikdash.
We still have
the Christians, for example. When we talk about the minim in the Gemara, it includes them, it includes various other groups that distort the Torah. Unfortunately, we still do have such groups around. So yeah. So that's why we don't say Aseres Adibris as part of Tefillas HaShachar. Nevertheless, the Alter Rebbe is saying a person should say it individually. L'maisa, the Alter Rebbe did not put it in the Siddur. Now, in addition, then Chazal tell us anybody who learns about an oila is considered like you bring an oila, and the same thing a chatas. So therefore, we learned this in Madur Abasra as well, that a person should be saying every day the parasha of the oila and mincha and shlomim and toda and chatas and oshem vada and oshem tolui and korban oila v'yored, which would be the section from parashas Vayikra that talks about that. Again, the Alter Rebbe did not include the psukim; he did include ezur mekoyman, which refers to all those korbanos. You do have some sedurim where it actually says between the Mishnayos of that Perek, Yehi Rotzen Kilu Ikrafti Oilo, Yehi Rotzen Kilu Ikrafti Chatos. The Alter Rebbe didn't include that either. Now, a korban, in addition, the Alter Rebbe adds, a korban that's brought voluntarily requires nesachim. So therefore, if a person is saying the sections about an oila and shlomim and a toida, then he would also say afterwards the section of nesachim from Parshas Shlach. But Chatos and Oshem doesn't require nesachim, so he wouldn't say that after saying those sections. Yeah, davening in general is b'mkayim korbanos. The Gemara tells us that tefillos b'mokum t'midim t'mikum. Yeah, but in addition, we also have that learning about a korban is considered the equivalent to bringing that korban in. Right.